Students are still on alert at Princeton University and the University of California in Santa Barbara after outbreaks of bacterial meningitis there late last year. Most college students get a meningitis vaccine, but it doesn't protect against this particular strain, meningitis B. These recent outbreaks were so serious, the FDA allowed the use of a vaccine that's not been approved in the U.S. The schools will administer a second dose of the vaccine in the coming weeks. Meningitis B causes blood poisoning, which can be devastating. The bacteria releases toxins that attack blood vessels and destroy circulation. Andy Marceau knows this all too well. 10 years ago, he was a senior at the University of Kansas, just weeks from graduation, when he says he started to feel a little unwell.
I was working part-time covering high school sports, and I was out at a softball game the night before, and I had to leave early because I started to get flu-like symptoms, and it came on pretty suddenly, the cold sweats, the nausea, the high temperatures. I decided I was just going to go to bed, and then if I still felt sick the next morning, I would go to the doctor.
By the next morning, Andy couldn't walk. His arms were covered with a strange purple rash.
I just wanted to stay in bed that morning, and if I had done that, I almost certainly would have died.
A friend insisted on taking him to the campus health center. He was immediately airlifted to a hospital in Kansas City.
I blacked out when we got there, and I don't remember much of the next 3 weeks. Overnight, I went from healthy 22-year-old college student to intensive care, on a ventilator, lungs failing, fighting for my life.
This didn't turn into an outbreak. The University of Kansas went to great lengths to make sure anyone who had contact with Andy got preventative antibiotics. Andy was put into a medically induced coma for 3 weeks to allow his body to heal.
The bacteria was releasing toxins that was burning thousands of tiny holes in my blood vessels, and that rash I saw on my arms was actually just thousands of little bruises. And so I was losing circulation not only to my organs, but also to my extremities. And so by the time I woke up 3 weeks later, my limbs were literally rotting while still attached to my body.
That's what you woke up to seeing your body in that condition, your extremities.
Exactly. I didn't see it initially because my arms and legs were covered in bandages. And the doctors, you know, they tried to prepare me and they told me, you have tissue damage equal to third-degree burns over 30% of your body. But, you know, nothing that they tell you can prepare you for when they take those bandages off and you see your limbs have turned black. I mean, and your fingers and toes are curling up and dying while still attached to you. At that point, it's dealing with this tissue damage. And the question is, how much of your limbs are going to have to be amputated? How much can be saved if you do aggressive burn treatments? And the aggressive burn treatments, basically, they just wet down that dead skin and they start slicing into it until you bleed, because at that point they know they've reached something that's still alive. And so I went through weeks and weeks of those treatments to try and save as much of my limbs as possible. And in the end, I lost the front half of both feet, so all my toes are gone, and I lost all of my fingers except my right thumb.
It just sounds like the most just hideous thing to go through.
It's incredibly traumatic. I mean, I had nightmares about it for months afterwards, and really the nightmares ended when I started writing about it.
The timing seems so dreadful as well, looking at this from the outside, that you're about to enter the real world. And how did that change your sense of what your plans were going to be from that point?
In a way, the timing was really good for me because I had never really been tested or challenged growing up, even throughout school. It prepared me for a career in journalism. I've already been laid off once. And, you know, getting through that experience, I think, stemmed a lot from going through that process of rehab and learning to walk again and learning to function again, which was very much like two steps forward, one step back.
As a working journalist, you lost all of your fingers. You just have one thumb. So how do you work with your disability, dealing with the writing and that sort of thing?
I taught myself to hold a pen and write again, and I did a lot of that from my wheelchair that first year out of the hospital. And then as far as typing, I use my right thumb, and I have a little nub of my left thumb, and I just kind of peck away at the keys with those two thumbs. And what I like to tell people is that my brain holds me back more than my hands at this point when I'm writing. So
the title of your book, How Meningitis Nearly Killed Me, Then Changed My Life for the Better, can you talk about how it did change your life for the better and how you're doing now?
Yeah. my basic goal in life before all of this happened was comfort. I wanted to be comfortable. While it may have been very difficult for me, I can see now that experiencing that pain made me a better person. And not only that, it created so much good in the world around me because there was so much compassion that poured out towards me because I was going through this pain. And so if you look at it from that broader perspective, not from the self-centered why me perspective, then you get the sense that, you know, this really was worth the pain. It was rewarding.
Andy Marceau is a reporter for the Topeka Capital Journal. His book is called Worth the Pain: How Meningitis Nearly Killed Me, Then Changed My Life for the Better. Andy, thank you.
Well, thank you.